You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Elizabeth Hazen. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Elizabeth, we're going to be talking about your show, of course, at Hess Flato, and the title of the show is Under the Sun. I love that title, and I really like your work in this show, but let's begin with the title. Why that particular title? I mean, these paintings look are, I suppose, landscapes in some ways, but Under the Sun, yeah. Can you tell me where that came from?
Well, I was looking for a title that encompassed my interest in, you know, the time of day, the weather, and atmosphere, and, you know, how I picture those in my mind, you know, when I make work. And then also referred a little obliquely maybe to the strange era that we're now in where, you know, the looming climate catastrophes are like seeping in to my imagination as I open it to make paintings. So I, you know, Under the Sun, I guess, you know, we're, it encompasses a lot, but also, you know, I don't know, grateful to be on the planet right now, but still a little, you know, aware that things are a little perilous.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not. We are in a time that so seems tentative in some way. So these are all oil and canvas, right? And they're all fairly large. I mean, some of them are smaller, but there's a few pretty large works in here. So to begin with, the larger works, you know, mm-hmm. which are quite large, are you know, such a different size. I mean, you know, the listeners are looking at these online, and everything online ends up looking the same, but of course, they're not. 66 by 55 inches isn't anything like 24 by 20 inches. So just comparing the sizes with something like the painting Rain Towards Morning and Field, they look the same, of course, online, but when you're seeing them in person, when I saw them in person, it's a different feeling, right? It's a different approach that almost looks like one is a study for the other. But is that the case, or how do you see these different scales?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the big ones can engulf you. You know, there's a sort of powerful thing that large paintings have an experience. But yes, I do. I don't think of the small ones as studies. They're complete in themselves. But I make the large paintings. I have a small version, and then I make a big version. And so I do it freehand so that they'll be different, and I can have fresh problems to encounter because I, you know, I don't want to, you know, project the painting and fill it in. I want to have, you know, sometimes I ruin the problems I set up for myself. But that's part of, I think, what makes painting feel alive, because you're with the artist as they solve things. And so the small ones, you know, are complete of themselves, and they have maybe a different impact, but I hope that they also, you know, convey what I'm thinking in a direct way.
Yeah, so let's jump into those, because what's also very interesting to me about these is that as the palette seems to change so much, and as well as what could be the narrative or what it is that we're looking at exactly. There's one called Flood Tide 2023, and this is 76 by 70, a really large work, and it seems to me different than the rest. I mean, they're all very different from one another, but some of them, especially some of the smaller ones, although it may be incorrect, but some of the smaller ones look a little more like a landscape. There's a horizon line, and some of them don't seem to have a horizon line. Flood Tide is like that. The colors are really intense, these kind of red fuchsia almost colors, and the landscape, so to speak, isn't as discernible. And again, I'm reading my own kind of take onto these, which is, you know, that I'm kind of interpreting these as landscapes. But yeah, let's talk about flood tide. That one is that one a bit different in terms of the idea of relating to the landscape?
Yeah, well, that one is the largest painting I've made to date, and it was a little bit different. I mean, I think the title Flood Tide kind of captures the way I wanted that big sky to be kind of pulling at the land and maybe water. It's not totally clear, you know. You know, I think that there's the sense that it's all kind of a bit aqueous, but then there's a lot of red atmosphere. That painting was actually, that canvas was, I don't know if you know, my mother is the artist Jane Freilicher, and she had, after she died, she had some paintings, some canvases left in her studio, and I painted on a couple of them, but this one was, because it was bigger, I kind of saved it for a long time trying to think of what painting to do. Like, I wanted something special to do for it. And so I think it has that quality a little bit. I don't know that I spent more time, and I painted it a little slowly. Also, the red, the way the reds adhered was a little different than my other paintings. So I responded to the canvas as I painted.
So that's very interesting, and I didn't know Jane Freilicher was your mother. So let's talk about that relationship a little bit. And I know she died in 2014, and my condolences for that. Sorry, I know that was a while ago, but that's always a very difficult thing. To have a mother that died, and she's a painter. So you're talking about a dialogue with her a little bit as well, right? I'd love to discuss that. You're painting over a work, and is that what you're saying? It's a bit of a dialogue with your mother's work?
Well, you know, I mean, I think in a funny way it is sort of a dialogue, but not with, I mean, you know, the canvas was left behind. It wasn't a painting. There was a very, very, very faint kind of rust color wash on it. Not even a, you wouldn't even call it a whole ground. It wasn't, you know. And so I wasn't really thinking about her work, but I have to say, this is the first time I've really felt like, oh, I wish she were here to see this show. I think, you know, I haven't really talked about my mother a lot in the past because I felt like I wanted to establish my voice, and now I feel like a little bit more ready to do that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. So again, in Flood Tide, which we're talking about, the composition and the colors seem very, very unusual. That red, that sort of cloud of red, if we can talk about that, it sounds almost like it relates to the kind of underpainting, right, you were working with?
Well, I use underpainting in all my paintings. I use colors, and this one I just let it show a lot. I mean, I made the underpainting so that it would show in the, I made small, there is a smaller version of this painting. And so I would say, it, you know, you can see the way it changed when I worked on the large one. Do you know what I mean? Like I made a 24 by 20 painting without thinking of that canvas. And so there are similarities and differences. But when I started working on that canvas and the way the paint went on, I just tried to respond to that so that I was, you know, conscious and took advantage of the opportunities it gave me.
Yeah, I think that's such an interesting, you know, way of working, even though it sounds like that wasn't, it's not an intentional part of your process, but but a dialogue with your mother as a painter. There's some kind of conversation there, really, in the canvas. That's very private, but it is an aesthetic one as well as a kind of a personal, emotional one, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's funny. I mean, I guess I was, you know, it wasn't totally conscious. It was more just that I cautioned myself, like, don't race ahead. Make sure you, appreciate this. Because like I said, the paint was going on in a different way. And I didn't want to just go, oh, well, I'm going to bend it to my will. I'm just going to, like, you know. And I think that this whole kind of, you know, foggy, hazy quality, that marshy quality, it's also in that painting, Rain Towards Morning, this kind of a marshy quality, is something I'm really attracted to, you know, conveying kind of the atmosphere, the thick air, moist air, and how you can capture that in paint.
Right. Yeah, now I see that more, right, that kind of atmospheric feeling. There's another one called Glade, and this is another large one, 66 by 55, and I like this one. I mean, I like all of them, but I chose to talk about this one because this is also a very different palette, and especially from what we just talked about. This one is full of yellows and has some more angular and geometric things happening here that weren't in the other one. I'd love to talk about this a little bit. This was a year earlier, I believe, than the other one as well, right?
Yeah, about 6 months earlier. It is very different because the lines kind of reverberate and don't surround color the way they do in the other paintings. Like, the lines are a color. You know, it's more graphic, and it's certainly more full-on morning, M-O-R-N, like morning time of day rather than. And I took that title, Glade, from the, you know, Yeats poem, Innisfree, because the Be Loud Glade, because, I mean, it just has this kind of a ringing quality, that painting. And you know, a lot of my work is, you know, I feel like I conjure a kind of evening crepuscular quality or nighttime or, you know, it's unclear if it's dawn or sunset, but they're almost like I imagine the nighttime when I'm working. You know, I mean, I'm not working from photographs or anything. I'm working from how I, you know, I picture. I start with these ink and watercolor drawings where I do kind of like stream of consciousness writing, almost like drawing, but it's like with a pen and ink and then watercolor. And I do it so that I can find sort of surprising shapes and things that I wouldn't be able to if I was like, okay, now I'm making a painting. And so in this painting, I just went for a kind of different feeling. I mean, it's very full on awake, I would say.
Yeah, and the shapes too, you know, feel like they hint at objects that we don't quite know about, or that's what how it strikes me, that there's almost a language in here that's a private language of your own, signifying what certain closed shapes mean. Is that the case, or am I just reading heavily into this? You know what I mean? Like, there's like you have your own iconography, you have your own marks of what this particular shape that looks like a bowl with two dashes in it and a line and a curve above it actually is, or is that just me reading into it? Like,
No. That it's like I mean, when I make these the drawings that they're based on, I tend to try to not pick up the brush, so I get this kind of cartoony quality, which happens if you do a fluid line and I'm trying to imagine, like, okay, I picture this big like dirt field, a farm field, and I'm drawing as if I'm drawing with a big stick in the dirt and making an equivalent to a blank page to this field, and I'm like, well, what would grow in this field, and how do I traverse it, and then what's above the field, and what kind of forms will rise up, and generally they tend to be these sort of tree-like shapes, and some of them are kind of, you know, refer to the crazy ways tree shapes can look almost human or can look like different kind of animals or hovering things. And then in the ground, on the ground area, I often, I'm picturing, you know, the lines crisscrossing themselves, and some of the shapes can get kind of hieroglyphic, and you know, I just
exactly.
kind of, yeah, play with, I don't know, you know, a different vocabulary.
And there's another one more that I'd like to talk about, nightshade, which is yet, you know, another completely different and very sort of sensual palette, not unlike the last two, but feels a very different approach. And that's what I love about all of these, really. They seem to all have this kind of varied approach, although, of course, your language is in all of them. Nightshade, mm-hmm. let's talk about that, because this feels, you know, that it relates in many ways to glade as well as flood tides. But again, this is something that is different in the sense that it has a horizon line, or what appears to be a horizon mm-hmm. line, mm-hmm. and other shapes that seem recognizable. Yet it also can be read as completely abstract. You know, in the context of the rest of these, I do see them as, as that one again, as a landscape almost.
Yeah, it has some of the kind of more symbolic shapes like glade does, and then it has more has the big nighttime feeling in the sky area. I mean, nightshade refers to, you know, strange plants that grow very much, you know, extra growth in the nighttime, and that big red, the kind of weird tree cloud shape is kind of a hybrid of the. I often make these kind of cloud forms where I'm kind of trying to lasso up some air with a big line, and then I put it on a trunk like a tree, so it's sort of it's sort of both at the same time. It's big enough so that then there's like a sky within it, and then it kind of abuts this melting tree form, that's the pink kind of one.
I like that. Yeah, it's fascinating to talk to you about these paintings and some of these forms, because that's what the viewer does, right? The viewer begins kind of projecting themselves into these forms. I mean, I'm not sure what kind of conversations you typically have with the viewers, or if people are asking questions about them, but it feels like it's work that people can project themselves into in many ways, that they can create connections within it. Is that something that you see happening or hear about from viewers?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I've been so heartened by people's response, and the fact that, you know, because these are, they're kind of invented, strange, you know, it's like they're not real, they're imaginary landscapes, and the space is kind of moves from a looking down, you're like looking down the way my previous work, which was more, you know, aerial paintings. And here you sort of start out looking down, and then quickly you sort of zoom up. And I've been really glad that people seem to respond to where I'm going. You know what I mean? They're not. And then I think of the line as kind of like a narrator that takes you around the space, that says like, here, come in, come with me. We're gonna make these things. You know, I really love Amy Filman's work, because she kind of creates these problems and then solves them in front of you. And she
right.
can sort of get herself into and out of anything, it seems. And so, I mean, I just want to have a little bit of, if I can, of that kind of immediacy, so that you're aware of the materiality of the surface. You're aware that it's a painting. It's not really an illusion of a landscape, but it gives you some of that feeling of landscape while also, you know, borrowing from abstract painting and saying, you know, here is the pleasure of paint.
I like that. I like that so much. I want to ask you one more question before we go. It's been great talking to you about this show, and I hope the listeners can follow the links and get a chance to see it before it closes on the 24th of February in 2024. What are you reading at the moment?
Well, I'm reading The Savage Detective by Bologna, but I kind of... I'm sort of cheating on it. I got, you know, it doesn't really have this, it has this interesting narrative structure, and I'm about, you know, two-thirds of the way in, and I'm like, oh, I just went to the Strand and picked up a whole bunch of books, and one of them is Kim Gordon's Girl in a Band, and that's, you know, memoir is so easy, and it's like, you know, easy to, I guess we all find them, you know, someone making sense of life is easy to, like a bath, you know, I'm going to take a little bath now and then I'm going to go back to some big book that I'm working on.
That's interesting. You mean biography or autobiography in that case versus other nonfiction?
Well, I don't read much nonfiction, and I accept, you know, in the New Yorker or something. I just read that amazing thing, article about Thelma Golden in the New Yorker. But I tend to read fiction, and often, you know, lengthy fiction. And so I feel like, you know, memoir is very, very accessible and fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel that way too. And thanks for sharing that, Elizabeth. Thanks for talking to me today. It's been such a pleasure. I wish you well with this show. Elizabeth, thanks again for talking with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been really fun to talk to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.